Everything was coming at me from all angles. I felt like my business was failing, like the joy of why I started in the first place had kind of been strangled out of it. My health had deteriorated, I couldn't focus. I was massively overwhelmed most of the time. I felt like I was kind of swimming uphill and not really achieving anything and just complaining a lot about the stuff rather than being able to do it. And parenting was hard. There was just so much hard stuff. I didn't feel good in my body. I felt slightly overweight and unfit, and it all kind of came crashing down. Hello, and welcome to Behind the Mother Mask. I'm your host, Annie Breen, registered nutritional therapist, master NLP practitioner, and transformational coach for exhausted mums who don't feel enough. My mission with this podcast is to lead with vulnerability by starting to lift the psychological mask you wear each day that protects you and others from the stuff that's hard to explain and talk about. It's about sharing from the middle, not just the open wounds or the healed scabs, but the messy middle. Let's go for honesty over perfection. Because I believe when you transform yourself, you automatically transform your relationships and parenting by passing down wisdom, not wounds. So if you're up for that, you definitely don't need to do it alone. I'm here to lead you on what could be the greatest adventure of your life, behind the mother mask, back home to yourself. Hello, how are you? Welcome back to episode 18 of Behind the Mother Mask. I hope you are well. So this week is a biggie. I am going to share part one of my ADHD journey. And actually, I'd hoped to do it earlier on, but I just kept adding to my notes because honestly, there isn't a day that goes by that I don't have another insight or a greater awareness, or I learn something. So I'm hoping it won't be too long. And in this part, I'm going to share my symptoms. So what I experienced, what led me to go and get the diagnosis, and just really the symptoms. I think that's going to be really helpful to you. And maybe you don't have ADHD. I'm not sharing this so you run off and get a diagnosis. Maybe that is something that you choose to explore. But it's more about how you can relate to maybe a version of these symptoms, or if it is ADHD, and then navigate a path forward. I really want to help people validate their own feelings through this podcast by sharing my reflections and my own experiences and that of my guests, but also offer a new perspective and a new way forward, that you don't need to be stuck in your suffering, that there are things that you can do to transform from inside out. So that's really important to me for you. So I'm going to share the symptoms. I'm going to share some of the research, or just some of the things that I agree with, and maybe some that I don't, in terms of ADHD. And I am talking specifically about ADHD in women and my experience. So this is just me sharing. I'm not preaching. I'm not talking about kids, although I might touch on it. I'm passionate there about the diagnosis process, but it's just me sharing from my experience. And if you have ADHD, or you're going through that process, or you can relate to some of these symptoms, maybe you have a different experience to me, and that is fine. And then finally, I'm just going to wrap up with my approach to that. And then in part two, which might not be consecutively, is that the right word? After this, hopefully it will be, I'm going to share some of the things that I found from doing the functional testing. And I'm going to share my test results and what they mean and what I'm doing. Okay, so it's a biggie. And Bonnie is home today, so if I get interrupted, that's fine. We'll just go with that. So I'm definitely adopting the despite it all mindset today. Okay, and I think I've also procrastinated on this because I'm worried about leaving stuff out. But let's just go with what we've got. So If you have listened to the very first episode of Behind the Mother Mask, that's where I shared the tough year that I had in 2021. And really, that was kind of the lead up to all of this. And then having the ADHD diagnosis in January, which I went for privately following hearing my friend Kate Moyousef talk about it on her ADHD and Women's podcast. That is an absolutely brilliant resource if you want to explore this further. And she's got a collective and online community as well. So do check her out. And it was hearing her describe it and describe the symptoms and what she went through that I really resonated with. So in my impulsive nature, I was like, I need to know. I just need to know. So we will talk about that and what that kind of meant for me, the diagnosis. But just coming back, backtracking a little bit, it's very much a new name for an old friend. It's not necessarily a new thing, and we'll call it a thing for now. But the reason that I went for the diagnosis in the first place is that 2021 just gradually kind of deteriorated for me. I was really struggling with my health, with my focus, with my memory, with my business, trying to almost expand my business and do it into someone else's framework and someone else's box. And I couldn't show up in the way that I was being advised to show up. Like, it was just too much. And what I realized is I was stuck behind a screen, literally in my wardrobe, where that is not where I'm going to change the world. And I wasn't able to do what I needed to do to market myself, because a lot of this is about marketing. We get stuck in these tasks as coaches and change experts and therapists that we're not necessarily skilled at. You know, we end up doing it all. So I was spreading myself along all these mundane, boring, technological type tasks that were disconnecting me anyway from the people that I really wanted to be in front of. So there was that. Bonnie was five, and that just triggered a lot of stuff. It just felt hard. And then I had the virus. I don't want to go too much into that because I know I'll have all sorts of labels put up on the podcast. But ultimately, the impact on my nervous system, an already oversensitive, overburdened nervous system, that was almost like the straw that broke the camel's back. And, you know, there's a lot we don't know about that. Regardless of your kind of thoughts on it, it's very odd what it's doing to the human body. However, I have not been unwell since. And in terms of my immunity and everything that I've done, it's all interconnected, right? Nervous system, immunity, things have got massively better. Hence me sitting here and being able to share this now. But I have to include that as a factor. Also, it was coming into winter and I can feel it now, but I was determined. I'm determined now not to let the winter kind of derail me, but that was definitely a factor as well. So I felt like everything was coming at me from all angles. I felt like my business was failing, like the joy of why I started it in the first place had kind of been strangled out of it. My health had deteriorated. I couldn't focus. I was massively overwhelmed most of the time. I felt like I was kind of swimming uphill and not really achieving anything and just complaining a lot about the stuff rather than being able to do it. And parenting was hard. There was just so much hard stuff. I didn't feel good in my body. I felt slightly overweight and unfit. And it all kind of came crashing down. And I remember launching this Christmas, I'd call it a challenge, but I was going to be running some masterclasses over Christmas called Christmas Fuck It, Do It Your Way, which actually we should do again. And I just pulled it all down. I couldn't do it. And I think the last that I posted on Instagram was like November or something. And then I just left and I took a step back. Yeah. So I came off social media and that was that. I just took a step back from everything. And it was from there that I went and explored the diagnosis, the ADHD. And interestingly, after it, I was left with a similar feeling that I have felt in the past of, well, now I'm left with me. So for me, I hear a lot of people who go through this process and feel huge relief, a huge mix of emotions. But I was a little bit deflated because ultimately in my approach, okay, so now I'm still left with me. It's great to have that label, diagnosis, whatever, but what does it mean to me? And that was just my initial feeling. And then I was able to look at this through my lens, through this kind of inside out lens, look at my individual needs holistically through the functional medicine model, root cause, what's going on. And that really started, I say, the next stage of my big self development adventure and personal growth journey of finding out more about me and what I need. And what's really interesting and will become apparent is what I need to up level to the next level. This is not about just firefighting symptoms or coping or managing or resolving a problem. This is about up-leveling, growing, creating the life that I want for me and my family, being the person that I'm here to be, living out my mission and helping mums. So I think that's really important just to see it in the grand scheme of the bigger picture, because it's so easy to get stuck and bogged down into problems in inverted commas and feel like we almost are doomed and everything's going wrong and we're just constantly on that hamster wheel trying to survive and get through the day, which is what it can feel like at the time. Okay, so I'll put the link in the show notes, but it's My Space, I think, is where I had my diagnosis. That app is not very good. Their help is, but the app isn't. But I'll put that there and you can book assessments and you can have a call, I think, before that and just ask any questions and that side of things. I paid in installments because I could not afford it all. So I'll put that there. I think that's the more practical and what led to it, a whistle stop tour. So let's go into some of the kind of symptoms and behaviors. And like I said before, you might relate to some of these and not necessarily have ADHD. And I think it's just going to be helpful because some of what I talk about, like I said, will be validating and then my approach will be helpful as well. So I like using analogies and metaphors. So I took Bonnie to the cinema the other day to watch Lyle, Lyle, Crocodile. Have you seen it? It's so good. It's like the greatest show. It's from the makers of Greatest Showman, but for crocodiles. I won't ruin it, but it's amazing. Anyway, when I was going into the cinema, you have to go through, you know, the car park barrier. So you have to pull the ticket and then the barrier goes up, comes down. You know the one. Actually, my window doesn't work. I spilled kombucha down it years ago and the mechanism broke. So I actually have to open the door, which makes it a bit more stressful. But I've always had this feeling, and probably since childhood, of going under that barrier that it's going to come down on my head or the car, but, you know, on my head. And it made me think, oh my God, that is what ADHD for me feels like. It's almost like there's this kind of pending doom, like this constant feeling that something bad is going to happen, almost like you're on edge. And it's almost that apprehension. I can feel my kind of shoulders like ducking down that something's going to come down on your head. And I thought that that was just a great analogy. Like, it makes sense to me. you might be thinking, Annie, you're crazy. I never think that. but that, yeah, it just made me think of that kind of apprehension that something bad is going to happen. And then the next big one was this inability to focus. You know, it felt like there were many hundreds of computer tabs open in my brain, not on the screen. There were, in fact, my Google account, my kind of home screen represents my brain. Always have loads of tabs open. And that's what it felt like. And I didn't know what to focus on. And even if they weren't open, I'd open them. You know, I would be almost darting from one thing to the next. I'd start one task or look into something and that would spur an interest or signpost me in another direction. And then I would jump there and then that would make me realize I need to do that. And it was like ping pong ball, or whatever that game is, that ping pong thing. And my focus was just darting all over the place. I also saw this meme the other day that it's like your kid, your five-year-old on a sugar high has got the remote control to your brain and they're changing all the channels. And that really is, I think it's a tangible way to try and explain this, and with the focus that takes me to the hyperactivity. So I was diagnosed with hyperactive and what's the other one? Inattentive. That's the one, right on cue. And for me, the hyperactivity is not so much physical, it's internalized hyperactivity. So almost hyperactivity of your mind, of your thoughts, that there is this kind of darting from one thing to the next, overthinking, changing the channel type mindset. So the focus was really hard for me because I could not focus on what I needed to do for my business. So I couldn't complete things and I had lots of things on the go and I was left feeling unsatisfied, like I wasn't able to bring a task to fruition, like to end, to complete a task. And I didn't feel like I was succeeding at stuff. But also this was just very distressing to feel like your focus is darting all over the place and trying to look at all the tabs at once. The next thing, and this was really priority for me to address, was my memory. And I must reiterate, these are not new symptoms that just popped out of thin air. These had been there for a long time. Like I said, a new name for an old friend. And they are symptoms. They are a collection of different symptoms, but they were heightened. They were exacerbated by what went on in 2021. And I kind of feel that it happened for a reason, that it needed to, because the journey from that has been life-changing. What I found out about myself, and the deeper that I've gone, the more I realize that I'm capable of and can expand into in terms of what I'm demanding from my life and my goals and desires and this kind of thing. So memory, honestly, I think this probably will be in the medical dictionary at some point, but I call it the Finding Dory effect. Like, I would forget stuff, and this is short-term memory. I'd forget stuff so easily. And this is almost like, say if you had a really good day, someone messaged you and had read something you'd done or listened to a podcast episode and they told you like it was brilliant and you'd kind of been big up, had some really positive feedback, maybe you got some good results with a client, or maybe you had a really good parenting day, or you know, it can be a mixed bag, but on the whole positive, you would forget the next day. It's almost like Groundhog Day, waking up and having to start all over again. And along with this kind of lack of short-term memory, which is distressing, it actually feels like there's a gap. I described this to Dan, not just with the memory, but the whole kind of presentation. It's almost like my nervous system has been pulled apart and disconnected, and I have to fill in the gaps. When I was driving somewhere, I don't know if it was this year or 2021, I remember thinking that I knew where I needed to go, but it's almost like the middle part of it had been erased. So I knew where I was trying to get to, but I didn't quite know what road to turn down. It was ever so odd. And this was picturing it in my mind. So when I got to it, it became familiar, but it was like a part of it had been erased. And that's a local journey. That's not like a one I have to use a sat nav for. And along with that memory issue, I find ADHDers, specifically me, but I know this is widespread, have a negativity bias. So 20 good things could happen in one day and one bad thing, and we focus on the bad thing. Same with that like pretty good day you can have. The next day, if it doesn't get off to a good start or whatever, you would tend to focus on that. We won't remember the good stuff that happened the day before, literally 24 hours before. And I describe it as not being able to ride the momentum. Like we can never build momentum. It is like you're starting again all the time. And by the way, I'm just describing this kind of at its most honest and worst. I'm absolutely not saying it always has to be this way, as will become clear. But you can't really get your teeth into anything or grab that momentum because you're always trying to fight against this negativity bias and remember stuff. Literally, I would lose my hairbrush every day, even though it has a home. Like it's really hard to explain, but I'd spend my time going around the house because I couldn't remember where I put stuff, even though I try and have a system and like with my notebooks, looking for a notebook. So it feels like you're trying to do a simple task and like things just keep getting in the way. And then you start to feel like you're doomed, like it's you, like you're not supposed to be doing this thing or whatever. Like when you try and do something positive, barriers and obstacles come up. It can feel like that kind of constantly. And then just jumping to the other big thing, because it's never one thing really. PMDD, the premenstrual dysphoric disorder, which I struggled with for decades, but only realized that I had those symptoms and again, symptoms in the last, like since I had Bonnie. And that and the ADHD. So, how I describe that is almost like Jekyll and Hyde, like part of the month you're fine and part of the month you're not. Read into that however you like. It's all on a scale. But literally, you can go into these really dark places of despair down this kind of rabbit hole that you should not be here anymore. That's how dark it is. And I've spoken to a lot of people with PMDD. I had Natalie on here, I think, on episode 8, and she said exactly the same thing. But combine that with the ADHD, you can see how overwhelming and despairing, debilitating that can be. And it makes me think back, and I'll try not to get distracted, but I'm not promising anything, to my postnatal journey, knowing what I know now, having these, and PMDD is much more about the sensitivity of the changes of the hormone. So it's happening at a cell receptor site, not an actual imbalance. And ADHD is exactly the same. It's about the nervous system function and the brain, and we've got to think that that is the body. Sometimes we talk about brain health as if it's not part of the body. We're talking about the body and the whole functioning of the nervous system and how hypersensitive, kind of overactive, overstimulated it can get. So any change in the environment, external, internal hormones, can really throw you on this kind of deregulated kind of emotional roller coaster. So the ADHD and the PMDD, I like my little metaphors and analogies. I had Googled that so many times, I don't know what the difference is. Honestly, in my Google history, what is the difference between a metaphor and analogy? Alongside with like some other funny things that come into my mind. It's like the 1984 classic, The Gremlins. And I can't watch that. That freaks me out. I think I did make Dan watch it just so he could understand what it's like. But it's like there's so many rules to managing your nervous system. Like your nervous system is Gizmo. He's really cute and fluffy and he's lovely, but you can't get him wet. You can't feed him after midnight. And there's something else you can't do, but you really need to know what that is. Otherwise, all hell will break loose. And that's what it feels like looking after your kind of gremlin nervous system. So I've talked about the overthinking and the hyperactive mind. I think this is really, really hard. When you hear this kind of generic or like self-care advice out there, especially your mums, like you need to switch off, you need to find time just to switch off. That's actually not humanly possible. We're not robots. But obviously the sentiment is to get in that parasympathetic state and relax. And it's almost impossible for people with ADHD to do that in maybe a conventional way. There are certainly other more grounding techniques and things that help. And I'm not saying relaxation is impossible at all, but it can feel that way. You actually have to work at it. And that might sound funny because, self-care should be alleviating stress and not be hard work. But I think sometimes when we're going against our programming, our wiring, we have to make conscious efforts to kind of do these more relaxing tasks, which for me are very much rooted in nature, like walking in nature. It doesn't mean being still, by the way. Motion is so important for ADHD. So you don't have to sit cross-legged and become a Buddhist monk and do like meditation. Sure, that's amazing, but you can walk in nature. And I think the big challenge is not having a constant stimulus into your brain. Like Dan went away not long ago and I listened to like 17 podcasts. I did 3 workshops. I did like 2 online trainings. I recorded a podcast episode. It was mental. I didn't stop. I was loving it. It wasn't bad. But I And I finished Selling Sunset as well on Netflix. So, you know, got a lot done. But actually, it was probably too much, because if I could, I would just have something going on all the time. You know, that stimulation. It's really hard for me to have solitude and just walk with no. If I left my phone and headphones at home, that's what I want to start doing, and just seeing if I can give myself that solitude, because we'll get onto it, but ADHD people are very, very attuned and intuitive. And actually, if we do listen to ourselves, there's a hell of a lot of wisdom and answers in there. And we don't. We always kind of place our attention outwards to external input and stimulus, because we love to learn. We love to kind of absorb all this stuff, and it kind of really ticks our passion box. But a lot of the time, if we could allow ourselves to tune in, I think we get so much kind of wisdom. So that's something I'm still working on. Judgmental and defensive. Sounds awful. We feel judged and we get easily defensive because of that. And I think sometimes we become the judger as well. So it's almost like we become the thing that we're worried about being the victim of or receiving, because we presume or predict that people are going to judge us and think we're crazy and all of this kind of stuff and not accept us. We start to judge them in our heads and have these kind of internal dialogues where we're almost like fighting with people, or being the voices of a conversation that likely will never happen. What's really interesting here, and I'm just going off piste a little bit, and I don't have the answer, the difference between intuition and paranoia. I think you have to be really careful, because what you feel on the inside is real. And if you feel like someone doesn't get you or doesn't accept you and that kind of thing, they're not making you feel good. It's more of an energetic thing. You know, when you leave someone and you never question yourself, you're feeling really positive, they made you feel really good. You just know. So I think sometimes we need to be careful that we do listen to our intuition. At the same time, is sort of understanding that negativity bias and some of these conversations that never happen. And perhaps all it takes is an honest conversation, and it's never as bad as what you think most of the time. Okay. And then the big thing off the back of the judgment and defensiveness is the rejection. So the rejection sensitivity dysphoria, all these lovely labels, like whack them on. But actually, you know, it kind of speaks to this quite accurately, that you feel rejected. You're very sensitive to rejection, and you can feel, I'm preaching again, but I've certainly felt like this, like no one likes me, which is why fucking Instagram is a nightmare, because the algorithm is awful. It's destroying businesses. Like, oh, you don't want to put all your like marketing efforts into Instagram. You want to get out there with people. I know I need to do that. But if I put something out there, and this is what was happening before I understood all of this, I just felt like people didn't like me. They didn't want to hear what I had to say. It was that rejection sensitivity dysphoria. And I'm just feeling like people don't like you. So yeah, you might, perhaps they don't, but, but yeah, and you're right, they don't. And then what else was I going to say? So like the overwhelm. It's so interesting. Like, I actually just took this from Attitude magazine, which I think is a really good magazine for ADHD. So people in ADHD world experience life more intensely, more passionately than neurotypicals. They have a low threshold for outside sensory experience because the day-to-day experience of their five senses and their thoughts is always on high volume. So this is kind of true. For me, I would say I'm very sensitive to sound and light and that kind of thing. But actually, you know, if I'm interested in the sensory kind of stimulation I'm putting in, i.e. listening to podcasts or conversations or that kind of thing, then that's fine because I'm interested in it. But yes, we can get overwhelmed from inside out. Absolutely. And I think that is what overwhelm is. We do have an external trigger a lot of the time. But what we don't talk about enough, and what I found through my work, is that once we have that external trigger, so a thought, a feeling that then triggers our internal kind of survival strategies and stress responses, which includes inflammation. And once we turn that inflammation tap on, that's when we feel like our brain is on fire, like we have an overwhelmed brain. It's actually an inflamed brain. And then that's harder to turn off. And this is where nutrition and functional medicine and testing comes in, because it really helps you look at those pathways and how your body is responding to stress and what you need to help that process. So I think so true. I love the expression over-challenged and under-resolved, because a lot of the time, this is what I found and what I have found through the testing, is that I've had a lot going in from the outside and how I'm perceiving my external world, but then a lot of nutrient depletion, deficiencies, kind of inflammation on the inside. So under-resolved a lot. And that goes to under-resolved trauma as well. And what I've also found is that it's almost like you have a supersonic jet to anxiety and overwhelm, i.e. that can feel like your emotional home that you can get home to very quickly, and a kind of rowboat through sludge to calm. So it's a lot harder to get to calm. That's what I was saying about it's harder to relax. It's like you've got to row harder to get to that emotional state. Now, emotional regulation. I don't like the word ADHD, as in the, I don't think it's accurate, because it doesn't account for the emotional regulation. I think that is so huge. If you think that we have such sensitive nervous systems, and this is what I found, it's really hard then to regulate those emotions. And that for me is what tends to kind of derail and get you stuck in those overwhelming emotional states. I think that is very much the surface level kind of symptom of where we get stuck: overwhelm, anxiety, fear, frustration. And just along with that, what I've also found is I have a sensitivity to frustration, or an intolerance to frustration and boredom. I do not do them. So it's almost like we are rejecting our own, we're intolerant of our own strong, intense emotions. It's quite interesting. And then underwhelmed, get bored. The mundane shit, like I just don't have much tolerance for it. And I think what I found, like I am a unfiltered, passionate kind of wrecking ball. And you just have to put me into a group of like-minded mums, souls, like in my NLP group, to see that in action. That when I'm engaged in something that I love, nothing can stop me. I am Miley Cyrus. And I absolutely love how Hannah Gadsby described this. It made so much sense to me when I heard her on Glennon Doyle's podcast. She said that neurotypical are all about what's important and neurodiverse about what's interesting. And that is so true. Like, I find it really hard to hold conversations that do not interest me. I do my best. I'm learning the neurotypical ways, but ultimately, you know, Dan loves building and he's very good at it, and I'm very supportive of him, and he will talk to me about nail guns and wood and things, and I do sit there with my kind of my fingers on my eyes just trying to concentrate, because I'm interested in him. I just can't get my head around all that stuff. But when we start talking about other things, because our conversations go down all sorts of kind of pathways, then yeah, 100% there. Fun. Okay, where are we? Sensitive, deeply feeling, right. Yeah, this is another really good way for me to describe me. And if I say you, it's because I feel like I'm kind of advocating for you as well, if you're relating to this. But ADHD is almost like you are walking around like a raw nerve, that you are an antennae picking up on everything in your environment. And that is so true. Like that, you know, I've always referred to myself as an empath and a deeply feeling person, a highly sensitive, and I've not seen that as a curse as a bad thing. I've seen it as a gift, almost on a psychic kind of level, picking up on people's energies. The problem is when you actually take on people's pain and you take on their intense emotions, that's really hard. For years, I was carrying other people's stuff. I didn't realize I was doing it. I kind of got confused between what was mine and what was theirs. And what I've learned now is when I come in contact with people, is that actually, you know, what is mine and what is theirs? And I'm much more understanding and compassionate and able to hold kind of space and have conversations around that without feeling rejected, without feeling like they hate me, because I know that it's not my stuff to carry, if that makes sense. And another thing, I actually find this quite funny, but I don't mean to offend anyone because I know that it's not funny. But this pathological demand avoidance that I heard about recently, and I think this is quite common in autism, where if you're basically expected to do something, or like someone's cooked you dinner and you're expected to eat it, you automatically avoid it because it's expected of you. So pathological demand avoidance. For me, this makes me think about rebellion, and just if someone wants me to do that, I go in the other direction. Or I'll always question the rules. I will not follow the crowd. And it's like Rage Against the Machine, where one of my favorite bands, there were, I picked up the bass, used to play the bass in bands, and they were one of the reason why I picked it up. And you know, you might know the song Killing in the Name Of, but I do think that the chorus of that is imprinted in my soul. And if you don't know that song, it goes something like, F you, I won't do what you tell me, said with love. And I do tend to be that way a little bit. And then, of course, like the impulse control, like this has got me into a little bit of trouble in terms of buying stuff and signing up for things. I'm very emotionally charged in my decision making and impulsive. And there was a time when I had a bit of a shopping addiction. And so I can really kind of empathize with people who, you know, you're good people and you're trying to like make a living and provide, but these impulses are very, very strong. And sometimes it can make you look like you don't care, you're a bit reckless, or you're spending money, you're not budgeting, but it's actually very, very hard. And I've seen a few accounts out there that are specifically there to help ADHD people with budgeting and kind of impulse control, because it's a really real thing. And we can be quite impulsive anyway. Like, you know, I'll be talking to Dan and then I'll just be like, I need to pee my pants. Not sure that's a good example, but that's how it tends to happen. And then I think just, you know, especially going back to last year, I felt like a failure and I felt ineffective. I felt like I was in the way. And actually, when I was seeing people thrive on Instagram, social media, who have ADHD, whether that's other coaches, therapists, like content creators, authors, it actually made me feel a bit worse. It didn't inspire me and think, oh, they're doing it. I was like, they're doing it, so why can't I? And they have ADHD. I don't get it. I do understand it a little bit more. And I think a big part of that is doing things to your own tune and doing things your way and letting go of the status quo and what you think you should be doing. I think that is so important. I believe that's what they're doing, and they're being honest and authentic. And I think that's so, so important. For years, I was not showing up as truly me. And I hope that it sounds like this is me. You know, I am a bit of a joker and this is how I am at home. And I really hope that that is coming across. And just to finish up this section, then I think the wider impact for me has definitely been around just in relationships, feeling very unseen and misunderstood. Parenting almost like you're walking on eggshells, you're overwhelmed, you can become a little bit avoidant because you don't want to have these kind of deep unconscious anxieties triggered that then triggers rage. So the reactions, I think, for me were quite immature. It's almost like I was a child parenting a child. And that really comes back to some of the unresolved stuff from childhood, which I can tell you this now has been, I would say, resolved massively. So I am talking a little bit, looking back on that wound. It's not so active now. It can still happen, obviously still triggered. But it was, yeah. And then the business side of things, like fitting myself into a box, exasperated and just stuck behind the screen when actually my values were connection with real people. They were fun, nature, energy. And I felt like I was going against my values. And that was really hard. And also I find delayed gratification really hard. So, you know, you put lots of time and energy and effort into an online business. You've got to give it time. I don't give it time. I want it done yesterday and I want to know I'm amazing and everyone loves me now. And then the last is the self-acceptance. We don't come out of birth one thing. I think this is multifaceted with many parts. And actually we have the opportunity to look at these symptoms and go within and go on this like incredible self-discovery adventure and find out about ourselves. Isn't it like the most best thing we can be educated on these days, knowing ourselves truly? So it's only been a gift, really. I'm sure there are more. I don't know how long I've been talking. I had a little interruption. I was going to go around the cycle of grief, but I'm not going to talk about that. I do think grief is a big part. People realizing that they've struggled all their life and only finding out at the age of whatever that they have these symptoms, disorders, however you see it. I will do that another time. So I just want to talk about my thoughts. What's kind of at the root cause. And this is just taken from a few people that I like to follow or read from and learn from. And I agree with these. And I kind of put this together in the bigger picture. So Mark Hyman, who's a functional medicine practitioner, you can follow him on Instagram. He said it's ADHD is a body disease that affects the brain. I have to agree. I don't think it's a disease, but absolutely. If we think about the body keeps the score and the brain is part of the body. We need to consider that there's way more to it, that actually 90% of our signaling is to the brain is coming from the body. Only 10% goes down. Mastin Kipp, who is an expert in trauma, he actually says instead of disorder, it's a response, attention deficit response. So he said that it comes from what happens in our biography. So the lived experience of the person becomes our biology, which is obviously the structure, function, and behavior of the body. So when our symptoms become labeled as a pathology, which we attach our identity to, then we obviously make it who we are, which I don't think is helpful at all. I'm not ADHD, I'm not attention deficit. I have those symptoms. And to be honest with you, I'm still working that out. I kind of see it as a friend because I see it as a gift. But I definitely think it's a response in terms of what has happened in the past. And then that goes into kind of Gabor Mate's definition, if you like. But he says, and he's written the book Scattered Minds, rather than an inherited disease, attention deficit disorder is a reversible impairment and a developmental delay with origins in infancy. It is rooted in multi-generational family stress and is in disturbed social conditions in a stressed body. So I really do agree with that. And my past and my experience of this absolutely aligns with that. Gabor Mate also said that human traits and are being characterized as a medical disorder. The human experience is now being pathologized by our health and unhealthy adaptations, by our healthy and unhealthy adaptations to modern life, our environment. He said it is not a fixed inherited brain disorder, but a physiological consequence of life in a particular environment, in a particular culture. One can grow out of it at any age, but the first step is to discard the medical model, along with any notion that medication can offer more than a partial stopgap. That was Gabor Mate. If you don't agree with that, go and take it up with him. I'd be too scared to, but I do agree with it. And then Johan Hari, amazing, has written the book Stolen Focus. He's got a great podcast with Dr. Rongen, as has Gabor Mate. So if you're not a reader, I listen to books, go check out those podcasts. He said it's not that your attention has collapsed. Your attention has been stolen from you by the very big forces, by very big forces. And to get our attention back, we have to understand what's happening and respond in a variety of ways that is different to what we're doing now. We have to protect our minds and our children's minds, and we have to do that by taking on the forces that are destroying our attention and focus. Boom. And in his book, he talks about those 12 forces. Totally agree. It's kind of a picture building here, right? James Greenbalt, that he's written Finally Focused, he said it's not a disease, but a disorder, which is a collection of symptoms. And he's an integrative, I can't say that word, psychiatrist. He said, I don't take a one-size-fits-all approach because it doesn't work. I look and detect the underlying causes of the disorder and I address those causes using natural treatments first. Absolutely. The medical medium, Anthony Williams, he said it's heavy metals trapped in the midline area of the brain, mainly aluminium and mercury. Definitely, I can understand that the heavy metals play a factor. They certainly have it in my picture. And then just to add a little bit of like history here, and Sigmund Freud, he wrote Civilization and Its Discontents. And I know that he has some interesting ideas, but what's interesting here, he said, so that book, Civilization and Its Discontents, was Freud sees as the important clash between the desire for individuality and the expectations of society. And he talks about the tension between civilization and the individual. The primary friction stems from the individual's quest for intrinsic freedom and civilization's contrary demand for conformity and repression. So, isn't that interesting? Like, there's such a big picture being built here that we're trying to have a human experience in a world that is not compatible with us having a human experience for so many reasons. And I just feel this really strong urge to be with nature, like I can trust nature, just that simple life away from technology and all the interference and the overstimulation, and to live a really simple life with people, connection with people, eating healthy food, having fun, like, just escaping the rat race, like the machine. I think Mo Gowdow calls it the machine. And I was reading this in Attitude. He said, here is the truth that people, I don't know who said this, sorry, but it's in Attitude magazine. Here is the truth that people with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, if you have an ADHD nervous system, you might as well have been born on a different planet. And I love that. I think it's true. And people, it's not us that's crazy, it's the world that's batshit bonkers. All right. We can just feel it. And then I just want to finish this bit. And I think what I'll do is I'll save my approach for the next episode. Otherwise, it's going to be a little bit too long. But I think in terms of children, and obviously here we're mums, I'm here to help you reclaim yourself, your energy, and step into your purpose so that you can enjoy life, but ultimately and create the life you want. We're doing that to model that to our kids and show them their own potential and help kind of lay the foundations for them to have a healthy, happy life and have the resources to navigate the curveballs. So I just want to read this. I think it was Mona Della Hook who wrote Beyond Behaviors. And she said, within conventional psychiatry and conventional understanding of these disorders, there's a movement to try and seek underlying causes and move away from the specific labels for specific behaviors and try to find underlying causes or perhaps patterns that stretch across many of these different behaviors. And then she was actually, oh, what's his name? I used to love him, Chris Kresser, who was quoting her there. And Chris was in a conversation with James Greenbalt, who wrote Finally Focused. And James' response was to that was, it's absolutely the right approach. And some very bright thinkers have articulated that. But I don't think we'll see it in our lifetime in terms of the psychiatric community. Pretty much the entire treatment model is based on the list of symptoms across all psychiatric disorders, anxiety, depression, and ADHD. So I think people are writing about it, and we're trying to get rid of the DSM, and that's the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Health. But I just think it's so much a part of how we diagnose and assess our children with ADHD, and I don't see much changing. That might sound a little bit dire, but what I'm saying to you is this is why it's so important to get that this information out. And if you can look at yourself and look at yourself through this kind of holistic individual lens and see this as an opportunity for self-discovery and look at what you need from a nutrient point of view, you know, really looking at the body from inside out, as well as looking at who you are and unresolved trauma and all these kind of different aspects that when addressed allow us to be healthier and happier, then it puts you back in the driving seat of your own life. And I just think this is so, so important, that what we're being told in the conventional medical model is out of date. It doesn't work. It doesn't work for these types of issues. And I'm very passionate about that, as you can probably hear. So we need to start looking outside of the label, outside of the diagnosis. And I'm not saying a diagnosis isn't helpful. I think it can be very helpful, but it's only the beginning of the journey. It's only the signpost. It's not the whole journey. That's down to you. And you don't have to do it alone. So I'm going to finish with something I read the other day, and then something from Scattered Minds. And it's a positive thing and an attitude. And then I'll do my approach in the next one when I talk about some of my test results and what I found. And I've kind of forgot to say, but it goes without saying, it shows up in women very differently. So that's why I just wanted to lay all my symptoms out there. Okay, so I read on Instagram literally the other day, and this is perfect. I 100% agree with this. ADHD should stand for attention dialed into a higher dimension. Fuck yes. Because I just feel like we are gifted souls, that we feel stuff for a reason, and that it is not a curse. But when we're living in an environment that is highly busy, highly paced, there's this kind of culture of doing and being busy and very technological and being in the rat race and like earning the money and blah, 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 that does not work for us at all. So I think, you know, it's looking at, yes, the small things and looking at what we can do from inside out, but also allowing ourselves to dream and create the life we really want to live and being brave enough to go for it, despite the odds, despite it all. And then Dr. Gabor Mate said here, Scattered Minds, he said about sensitivity, because I think this is just a huge part of this. Most ADHDers are empaths and intuitives. He said, what is being transmitted genetically is not ADD or ADHD, or its equally ill-mannered and discombobulating relatives, but sensitivity. The existence of sensitive people is an advantage for humankind, because it is this group that best expresses humanity's creative urges and needs. Through their instinctual responses, the world is best interpreted. Under normal circumstances, they are the artists, the artisans, seekers, the inventors, the shamans, the poets, the prophets. There would be powerful and evolutionary reasons for the survival for genetic material coding for sensitivity. It is not diseases that are being inherited, but a trait of intrinsic survival value to human beings. Sensitivity is transmuted into suffering and disorders only when the world is unable to heed the exquisitely tuned physiological and psychic responses of the sensitive individual. ADHD is not a natural state. It is, to adapt a famous phrase from Sigmund Freud, one of civilization's discontents. And I quoted that, didn't I, before? That's because I put this in first and I thought it would make sense to do that because I didn't know what it meant. And then I'll leave you with this attitude, that it seems odd to call a condition a disorder when the condition comes with so many positive features. People with ADHD style nervous system tend to be great problem solvers. They wade into problems that have stumped everyone else and jump to the answer. They are affable, likable people with a sense of humor. They have what Paul Wender calls relentless determination. When they get hooked on a challenge, they tackle it with one approach after another until they master the problem. And then they may lose interest entirely when it's no longer a challenge. I love it. ADHD, attention dialed into a higher dimension. Let's go with that, people. Okay, if you found this helpful or you have any more questions, maybe it's the first time you've considered this, it might be a factor in you and your health. It might just be that you can connect with some of the symptoms and you're really interested to find a kind of way forward. Please do drop me a message. I'm running my masterclass, You Are More Than a Mum, on the 27th of October. I think I forgot to mention that, but I've put the link in the show notes for you to sign up. And that is where I share my Energized Mother model. So this is all what I have found over the years, including my approach to ADHD, PMDD. I've kind of put it together into this simple model, which is very much focused on the underlying cause, which has come up so much, helping you find your identity, deal with unresolved trauma, and then reclaim your energy and step into your purpose. So please do go and sign up to that. It's free and we'll have a great time. I'll be back next week, but whether I've got part two organized, let's just fingers crossed on that one. But there will be a part two where I talk through what I did and my approach. Okay, cool. I hope you have a good week. Let me know if you enjoyed this and I will speak to you soon. Take care.